Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We've got a full house today, Stone.
We most certainly do. This is going to be a fantastic show. First up on Atlanta Business Radio this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Executive Vice President with Skanska. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Scott Cannon. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Now, is there any story behind the name Skanska? It's kind of unusual.
It is a little unusual. We were founded over 125 years ago in a region in Sweden. And so Skanska is actually, it's actually a region in Sweden. So it's not really anything fancy,
just sounds cool.
Just an area.
Have you been there?
Skanska. I've been to Stockholm a few times, yes.
Nice.
Yes, it's beautiful.
So now Skanska, I'm seeing your name pop up all over the city here. You guys seem pretty busy doing what you do.
Yes, we have been very busy, and Atlanta's a big growth market for us right now. Currently, we have projects at Hartsfield-Jackson. We're just breaking ground right across from the studio at for the Mercedes-Benz headquarters. We're also working at Turner Broadcasting, as well as we have a project going on at 3400 Overton that we're breaking ground on as well. Or actually, we're almost topped out right now. So we've got a lot of projects going on right now, and it's been really, really nice, you know, kind of seeing the business grow here in Atlanta.
So now, what's it that you exactly do? What is Skanska doing when you come to town and work on the project?
So we have we literally have four, you know, distinct business units in the U.S. And I'll talk about that for a second, then I'll bullet down to Atlanta.
Sure.
In the U.S., we have four business, which is a vertical unit, which I work for, which is USA Building. We have our civil component, which is what you would think it would be. It's civil infrastructure, roads. We have a commercial development group, and they're based in Houston, Washington, D.C., Seattle, and Boston. And we have a P3 group, which does, public-private partnerships and development. So those are our four business units. In Atlanta, we have our vertical group, and we also have our civil group, who's looking to potentially expand a little bit more because of the robust infrastructure needs here in Atlanta. So we do exactly what you think we would do. You know, we develop projects, we build projects. Anything from roads, bridges, office buildings, healthcare, higher education, aviation. So a little bit of the whole gamut.
Now, your background, you went to Georgia Tech, right?
I did go to Georgia Tech. My degree is in civil engineering, and I spent some time doing a little bit of civil engineering and realized I wanted to get my degree in engineering, but I felt like the construction avenue was probably a little more fitted for my personality, and so I went that route.
So now, what was it like going to Georgia Tech?
Well, if I'm being really honest and candid,
it was hard.
It was hard. I grew up in Northeast Georgia in a small town called Clayton, Georgia, in Raven County. And
you were thinking, one day I'll be in Stockholm.
Wasn't quite like that. But once I got to Tech, I realized that there are a lot of smart kids there, and I was in survival mode from day one. So very proud to have gotten out of there. But a great school.
And then your work with Skanska, how did that come about?
When I was at Georgia Tech, I was there and I wanted to get some experience in the construction industry. I interviewed with a couple of folks there and got a job as an internship right around the Olympics in 1996. The place was booming. They needed help. And so they picked me up. And I think as long as I was breathing, they were going to hire me because they needed so much help. And then that piqued my interest. And so I was working all over the city, whether it was in just doing odds and ends for the company, and then from there, I graduated from Georgia Tech, I came on full time and have done a little bit of everything from being a project engineer to on site as a field engineer, and I've worked a little bit in Georgia. I've spent a lot of time in Georgia for my first part of my career, and then I spent 15 years in Texas, and I moved back here about a year and a half ago. So just spent a lot of time, doing a lot of different projects, primarily healthcare and higher education. So that's been pretty much my career.
Now, I'm reading a lot and I'm seeing a lot about these kind of eco-friendly buildings. Do you guys play in that space as well?
We certainly do. The environmental space is a very important space for Skanska. We're a sustainability means a lot to our company. It means a lot to the fabric of our company. It's one of our platforms. And so, you know, we say we build projects that matter. And whether it's healthcare, higher education, or any of the building sectors, you know, we like to have a green component involved with those kind of projects. And some are, you know, some are small things, but some are, you know, just like the project at Georgia Tech, the Living Building Challenge Project. That's to the extreme.
What is that Living Building?
So at Georgia Tech, we're undertaking a project with in a partnership with the Candida Fund and Georgia Tech. And we're collaborating with Lordick Sargent and Miller Hall Partners to create a project that is, I like to say it's a project, it's a building with a heartbeat, meaning it's a project that it regenerates power, it regenerates water. That's the goal. And so it'll be one of the most sustainable, environmentally friendly projects literally in the Southeast.
And then when you have that going in, when you say we're going to do this, you have to think about that at the very start, right? Because everything is kind of built around that kind of objective.
Absolutely. You have to start. So we will literally have almost probably about 14 months of what we call pre-construction, meaning that's planning before we construct anything. So there'll be a lot of meetings, partnership conversations around the building, where the building's going to be located, how it's going to be positioned, you know, what kind of window systems, what kind of HVAC systems, all those things will be contemplated in the pre-construction phases so that when we start the construction, you know, we know exactly what we're building. We know generally almost to the T of the performance of the building. And then also what's unique about this particular project, a lot of projects, when we complete the building, you know, we turn it over to our clients and it's their building and they occupy it and they, you know, it's their building.
Right, because your work is done at that point, right?
Typically, our work is done. On this particular project, we will actually have someone that is going back and interviewing the occupants of the building to make sure the building's performing the way the way it's supposed to perform. We'll have checks and balances to make sure that, you know, all the systems are working properly, because as it's, you know, cloned, it is a living building. So we'll start in the project in 2017, we'll wrap up in 2019, but the certification process will go all the way until 2020, because once we complete the building, we're not complete with the certification until the building is performing
the way it should
or designed.
So I think I understand the value of having a green building from a marketing standpoint, a branding, a goodwill, all that kind of stuff. I think that's probably good marketing mojo. Is there some bottom line dollar and cents value to having a building like that? I mean, does it actually make or save money as well when you do that?
Well, if you think about it over time, we haven't ran all the numbers on this particular project just yet because we're just starting. But if you think about it over time, you know, you have most buildings are, 50, 60, 70 year buildings at a minimum. And so if you think about the power, water, consumption.
Unless it's a football stadium.
Well, football stadium.
Those football, don't live as long
those
as
are disposable.
They don't live as long. I mean, that's a fast market. There is no right. doubt. You pick up quickly on that. I think every team in America is actually
renovating. It's like a 20-year building.
It's like a 20-year building. But if you think about the energy savings that would go into, you know, from a power perspective, water perspective, there are savings. But here's the deal. Here's the real, I'd say, punchline. This is where the world's going. We're eventually going to be going to buildings that are, mm-hmm. you know, that are going to be have their own heartbeat, if you will. So while this may be a new project now, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, this will be where buildings will go. And this is where people want to be, in environmentally friendly space.
So I'm going to expect it as a tenant. That's going to be one of my criteria. More and more as time goes by, I'm going to want that.
As time goes by, that's what you will want. And it's simple things from daylighting, letting natural light into the building. And, you know, one of the goals is, you know, if you have a building that's in the center core, if you're in the middle, you'd like to see daylight. It's simple concepts like that, because it's a user-friendly building.
There's some nuance to that, because it sounds good. Yeah, we'd like to see daylight, but then you're like, daylight's hot. You know, I got to manage now a lot of sunlight that's heating the building, right?
That's correct. So positioning the building is a very important, very important element. You know, where the sun's, you know, the hotter sun in the west, you know, you got the, you know, the building position so that it's maybe not collecting as much of the sunlight, right. Or you may have some fins or some kind of decorative elements on the outside that actually block the sun, but let that light in. And so there are a lot of different elements that go into these buildings, and positioning and, you know, how the sun, you know, moves is a big part of it.
When you're doing a project, a large project like this, I'm sure like the architects have opinions, right? That they think that it should be a certain way. And then the engineers have opinions that it should be a certain way. Like, how do you all kind of,
can you imagine all the moving parts? I mean, you got to measure twice and cut once. We understand that as a general strategic objective, but you got a lot of folks with measuring tapes and
opinions.
And opinions. So what we do is we put our strongest people on the teams and we arm wrestle.
That's how you
and in all seriousness, what we actually, you know, the firms we work with, we all have a very aligned vision. So these projects are, you know, they're very similar in the fact that the people that are working on the teams that are working on them, their visions are aligned. So when you get in a room and you're having discussions about the different elements, you know, it's our job to bring solutions to the team. And when they're when our architects or engineers are looking at certain design systems or design elements, you know, one of the big things for our company is to discuss, is it constructible and what does it cost? So that way our decision makers can always have real-time information every time we're in a meeting that they can walk out of and make decisions based on, you know, the different elements we've talked about in the building, you know, for the project. So to answer your question, there are, you know, there's some interesting meetings that go on. There's no doubt about it. But at the end of the day, the goal is for our client. The goal is for our companies and also for the, you know, for the environment. We want the people that utilize this building to, when they walk in that building the very first time, it's got to be wow. I mean, it's going to be wow. They're going to want to be there because it'll be nothing like that in the Southeast.
But like this year, for instance, if you're going to do it in 2017, or maybe we've already had this conversation, if I come to you and I say, okay, I want a rainforest on the fourth floor and I'd like, you know, a little bit of a desert environment on the third floor, you can go look at feasibility and come back to me and say, okay, Stone, that's going to cost you X and Y and have this impact on the seventh floor.
Stone, if you wanted those environments, we could absolutely
we could
run the cost analysis and let you guys know what it would be. But, you know, you get the concept. The concept is our job is to be a partner with the team and to bring solutions. And but, you know, it's funny. You never know what is going to come out of one of those meetings. You never know what the ideas are going to be. You know, everything from, you know, how to treat the sewage to how to collect rainwater to what kind of, you know, insulated or exterior glass you're going to be using, what kind of roof systems, what kind of HVAC systems, everything it's a sum of parts.
Right. And it's one of those things that once you are entertaining one thing or going down one path, that opens up opportunities.
Yes.
Right, for the other groups that are involved, right?
Absolutely. I mean, sometimes you get locked in on one solution, and then what you don't realize is that leads on to, you know, the next step or the next phase or the next. Take, for example, the exterior curtain wall. If you were to have a lot of light in, well, that affects the HVAC systems, how cool it's going to be, what are the solutions. And so you have to really run down each of these different solutions to make sure the building is going to perform the way that we say the building is going to perform.
Now, can we talk a little bit about, you're involved in the transportation side as well and involved in the, the governor's 10-year, $10 billion transportation plan?
Yeah, not yet, but somewhat. So we are, as the governor, as they released that plan, you know, it's a lot of money. There's a lot of infrastructure needs here in Atlanta. And so our civil group is, you know, looking to really ramp up their operations here in the Southeast. We have projects very similar to what's going to happen in Georgia. We have a project in Orlando for I-4. It's a large interchange project and highway. I think, I can't remember how many structures we have, but I want to say it's over 100 structures for this particular project. And that's a project where it's a P3, where it's a public-private partnership. And so we'll design it, we'll own it, we'll lease it, and we'll operate the highway and the tolls for a certain amount of time. And so we see those opportunities coming here to Georgia. The laws allow it, and it helps the economy, and also helps the state funding because we can actually front the money or put the money up to get the project started and constructed. And so we will be, we're definitely going to be a big player when those plans roll out.
So how do you get work like this? So do you have the group of people who are trying to secure the contract, they bring in the smart people like you to explain stuff, and they just, how do you get the work?
It's different for every single project.
Yeah.
And so what I would say is getting the work is really about knowing your clients and knowing their needs. Nobody's ever going to get any business, whether, you know, if you're a doctor or a lawyer, if you don't know your client's needs, then you're not going to probably secure the business. And so what we try to do is get an intimate understanding of what the needs are, whether that is the type of construction that's going to be ongoing, or whether it's the financial component of it, or if it's a combination, or if it's the operation. So we need to know all those pieces so that we can actually, what I would say, tender, you know, a good project or a good bid, if you will. And so knowledge is key. Knowledge is power. And we try to gather as much as we can to help secure the work.
Now, can you talk a little bit about the Mercedes-Benz headquarters that's opening right here across the street?
Absolutely. It's a phenomenal project. And they just had the groundbreaking about a week ago. And so we had the governor and the mayor of Sandy Springs, mayor of Atlanta, and the present CEO of Mercedes-Benz USA there. Great project. It's going to be about 200,000 square feet of new office space, about 215,000 square feet of garage space.
Wow.
And it's going to be a LEED certified building. So it'll get LEED certification, which will, once again, sustainable. They're making great, you know, good sustainable solutions. A great example is, you know, the property is right across from your studio. And there were a lot of trees that were taken off the project. And those trees, we actually got the trees, collected them, and actually took them down to Zach Brown's camp at Southern Ground.
No way. Wow.
We transported all the trees there, and they're going to be making benches, tables,
that's
various different things with the trees. And so it's a phenomenal project. And I think they're projected right now to house approximately about 1,000 employees in that building. So huge project. Great landmark.
When's it supposed to be done about?
So we started about a month or two ago, and we've got about, I want to say it's like a 17, 18 month project from now. So it'll be opened up, and it'll be a gorgeous building that you can go online and check some of the renderings out. It's gorgeous.
So I want to talk about technology. We got a software guy coming up later in the program, but I got to believe technology has just had a huge impact on your industry and your personal career. It's got to be just constantly changing and getting better. Or
Stone, you wouldn't believe. So I started in 1996, where we literally had, you know,
paper.
Actually blueprints. Actually blueprints, and then it went to paper. And now, literally, and we had to post all of our drawings and keep all of our updates there. And we were actually carrying drawings out in the field. That's gone.
Those days are gone.
They're gone. They've been gone. They'll never come back. And so basically we can build products paperless today.
Which allows you to model a lot of things that you couldn't possibly have done before, right?
Absolutely. Most of the projects come to us instead of in the beginning on paper. They come in, you know, what we call building information models. So we're able to coordinate, you know, where structural steel is going to be versus, you know, the ductwork. So there's no collisions. And we're able to work all that out.
Logistics too, a bit, to right?
Logistics,
like getting the stuff delivered in time. You're not waiting on the different people.
How cranes are going to be positioned? How traffic is going to be positioned? How traffic is going to flow? How materials are going to come in and out? And then also, all of our guys now we take that information and we put it onto literally iPads. And so our guys that are building the projects are out in the field, walking around with their iPads. They can zoom in on areas. It's live information. So as things are changing, our office, you know, they're posting the documents, but they're live in the field. So our guys never have to worry about if they're building off the current set of documents.
Nice.
And it's really amazing. And we have projects, that's something I think is very innovative. You know, I told you earlier, we build what matters. You know, we got some projects, we got a project down at Grady Hospital right now. We're inside the hospital. We're doing a women's and infants expansion or renovation. And we have, what's called an eyesight monitor. So we have a monitor that's in the building where our guys can, if there's any kind of noise or dust or any particulate count that gets higher than a certain threshold, it'll notify them on their iPads or iPhones so we can go deal with, you know, situations in real time. So You don't have to be there to know what's going on.
Wow.
And so, and I could go on and on about technology, but it is a, it's ever changing our industry. And, you know, we're building buildings faster. We're building with higher quality these days. And it's because of technology.
It sounds like you're pretty bullish about the Atlanta market as well.
We're very bullish about Atlanta. You know, we see this market as a huge growth market for us. It's a market sector where it fits our company very well, whether it's commercial space, healthcare, roads. Mm-hmm. It is a perfect fit for Skanska, and we're going to be very bullish over the years to come.
So you're planning to get more involved in the community and do more stuff?
Absolutely.
The city and the different, now you're working with Zach Brown, but you're doing other things to work with other groups in town?
Absolutely. So we're, you know, we do a lot of work, obviously, at Georgia Tech. We also, we do a lot of work with the Special Olympics. And, you know, we had also some opportunity to work with the trees with Hands on Atlanta. And so it's been a very, very good opportunity for us. And, you know, as you grow, you know, the deal, you know, to be part of the community, you got to get your tentacles out and you got to spread your roots. And that's our game plan. And we got a lot of great young talent that are coming into our company. Very fortunate that Skanska is a place that young talent want to come to because of our philosophy and how our company is orchestrates.
Good stuff. So if somebody wanted to learn more about Skanska, a website for you guys?
Yeah, you can do it. You can easily go to www.skanska.com and you can drill into as much information as you would like.
And maybe come back and share with us when you got something else going on.
We'd love to.
Seems like every week you got something else going on.
We do. We would love to do that. And thank you for your time. And we really appreciate it.
Well, I think it might be fun. And I don't know when the timing is appropriate, but if you're up for this, Lee, maybe to come in with someone from the Mercedes-Benz folks and sit down and talk about the relationship and how you guys are working together. I think that'd be a cool segment because they're right across the street. It's like, you know.
I think we could orchestrate that for you guys.
You up for that? I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right, great. We'll do that. We'll keep up the good work. Can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely. Thank y'all.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have with us Vice President with Rocket Software, Mr. Jeremy Sharp. Hey, man, did you learn anything in that last segment?
I did. I didn't realize I could learn so much about building, and
there's
it was
probably
quite enjoyable.
Similarities, right?
Well, I was especially pleased to hear about how technology is improving their lives. Of course, I live in the technology field, so that's always encouraging to hear.
And it's kind of neat that in all these industries that are kind of not obvious, that technology is permeating and really making an impact.
Well, I think in general, our lives are open to technology as a consumer. And so generally speaking, as you move from consumer into business, we're more and more open. If we can be more efficient about our lives, we can be more efficient in our homes, we can be more efficient in the way that we conduct our business. I think it's a great ecosystem.
So now you're with Rocket Software. Can you share a little bit about what Rocket's doing for folks?
Yeah, so Rocket Software is a global software company. We work primarily in the enterprise space, which means it's not necessarily directly with consumers, but it's more with the large businesses around the world. We are a large business partner with IBM. So we've had a relationship with IBM for probably almost about 18, 19 years now. We're in our 26th year of business, and headquarters is actually up in Massachusetts, but we have a large presence down here in Atlanta. We help businesses take basically their infrastructure and make it more and more relevant for today. So when we're looking at some larger established organizations who have slightly older base systems, we're able to take those, modernize them, and make them more relevant for the new digital economy, which in turn for those customers is a big plus, because quite often they're in a situation where they have an infrastructure which is very rock solid, but it doesn't necessarily dance with this new world that we used to. So if we can give them a tool or a technique or a method to be able to make it more relevant, then they're very happy, and of course that makes us happy too.
Now you mentioned working with IBM. Are you involved in their Watson project?
So you know, there are three things that IBM is doing a very good job of, and of course Watson is their analytics tool. So we have a number of different ways of being able to work with their analytics. So analytics is a very big thing. If you're a business and you've got stacks of data, What makes you competitive is to be able to take that data and analyze it and make some key business decisions based off that data, whether it be data that's years old or, you know, almost minutes old. And of course, the closer you get to the time frame, the better your predictive analytics are. So we have a number of tools and products that actually help increase on the analytics side. So yes.
Now, are you involved in the machine learning side of it?
No, we're not. No.
And then, so how are you helping IBM?
Well, so IBM has an enormous portfolio of products, and so there's two sides to our business. One is we actually work with them on the side, which we are basically part of their development team. So at the core of Rocket, our CEO and founder is a developer. And he's basically has taken it on that there are certain solutions that IBM trusts us to actually do the ongoing maintenance, support, and enhancements to. And so if they want to concentrate more on the analytics side, and they've got some very established products out there in a big market, but they would rather have their concentration on the analytics side of things, they don't want to drop the support and maintenance for the rest of it. So they choose us as a very key business partner mm-hmm. to be able to pick up the reins with that and continue running. And so we've done that with a number of their products. At the same time, we'll quite often build a product and we'll look to IBM to see if this is something that they want to actually resell as well.
That's going to be fun to build something and say, hey, guys, what do you think about this? And here's why we think it might. That's going to be a really fun part of the job.
It really is. It's something that has really been the core to Rocket for the last 26 years of business. So the relationship that we have with them isn't just on that side of things. Partner with them. You know, a lot of their customers are our end users as well. Mm-hmm. So we're sort of, lots of conversations go on around the customer base as well.
Now, what brought you to Atlanta?
Well, actually, the underlying software company did. So I was originally based in London. And then I got moved over in 2002 for 2 years. And, I met my lovely lady wife, and I haven't gone back.
It's not a punishment.
Certainly not. No, I was lucky enough to travel backwards and forwards between London and Atlanta for about the best part of 12 months, and I really enjoyed it. And Atlanta's got a lot going for it. Of course, London has got a number of good things, but I think it's a very vibrant city. It's been growing ever since I've been here. It's got a pretty good standard of living and a pretty low cost of living as well.
What about
and the
recruiting?
Weather is spectacular.
Talent? Are you finding the talent that you need and want here? I would think maybe it's pretty rich pool. Yeah,
absolutely. You only have to look at the colleges, which were within, probably sort of 5 square miles of downtown. You have Georgia Tech, clearly. You've got Georgia State, you've got Emory, and they're just three. And then you look outside the state as well. So it being the biggest city in the South, it has this draw for people to come from all other states. So, you know, if I go through some of my employees and you ask them, where are you from originally? Atlanta isn't normally the first answer,
right,
you know,
right.
But they went to college close to here and they came here because of all the positive things I mentioned before. It's a really rich pool to be able to pick from.
Now, do you work at all with the colleges to help them from a curriculum standpoint to get the people you need, or do you just get them out of college and then you train them the Rocket way?
Over the last 3 or 4 years, we've been working with a few of them. We work on an intern program. Mm-hmm. We've managed to place a number of them on following years. So that's about as extensive as we've got directly here in Atlanta, although some of the other markets we're getting a bit more involved in the curriculum, which I can only see over a period of time will proliferate out to the Atlanta market.
So I want to learn more about this analytics stuff, because it seems to me that there's so much data available, and even in our little company, we don't even really know how to take full advantage of the little bit of data we collect, much less, you know, a great big organization. But you can actually make some pretty interesting predictions based on data, right? You can really
yep.
get good at this.
Yeah. So, you know, there is there are a number of companies that have been out there for years called business intelligence-based companies.
Right.
And so analytics, predictive analytics is key to being able to create a competitive edge. So if you are in trading within the banking industry, you are probably going to run through data, historic data of performance of various different stocks or industries where you may be purchasing stocks from. You can create these programs. You can look at these specific intelligence, these business intelligence programs, and to be able to decide within seconds and moments if that stock is going to be a good performer for you based on some of the historic data that you've got to it. Now, of course, you're not necessarily predicting the future, but it's a lot better than just taking a gut feel and saying, well, I think it worked out well last time. Right. Let's have a go.
You have
time.
A system and you have criteria, and this helps you kind of make the right call and almost in real time.
Yeah, so you've got people called analysts. And then you've got data. And so you merge the two together and you have a program which will actually pull the data out of all these different systems. So you've got to remember that a large bank, you know, doesn't just have a single system. It will have, you know, 20 different systems.
Right.
It was based over periods of time where they made acquisitions and mergers and, you know, built something new, thought that was the new thing, and then built something else new. And each of these pieces were very good at one moment in time. So now you've got all this disparate data. A lot of what IBM does, a lot of what we do, is able to take all those different disparate systems and be able to pull the data at real time and be able to put it into these business intelligence programs. And then you're really taking a competitive edge. So
now when you're working with companies like banking, there are so many rules and they tend to be risk averse. What's the sales look like from that standpoint? It must be such a complex and long sales process because, you know, they don't like to make change or risk or.
You're dead right. It's you know, we don't just offer it and people
and
say, I'll have
oh,
some
I'm
of
in.
That.
It's
yeah.
not like
yeah,
an impulse
swipe
buy.
The credit card and we're good. No, it's the complex sale is something that people have learned over a period of time. But I think the art to it is to understand the real business need. So sales over years have kind of gone through iterations. So, it, you know, back in the sort of early days, it was, you know, the guy that was going to convince you that this could do something for you. You know, you're buying snake oil type
right.
thing. You know, this is going to make all
point,
your ailments go.
Well, at one point, the salesperson had the intelligence.
Yeah.
Right? They knew everything.
Right.
But now it seems like the consumer knows more and more.
Exactly. But we also have to still be careful that the patient isn't doing the diagnosis.
Right.
So that's
the
always
web
the difficulty.
MD,
well, there's yeah. I mean, you know, you can scare yourself if you go on the website
right.
and you've got a pain in your arm. You know,
right.
is it the left arm, the right arm? You could have a heart attack, and all you know is you just sprained it. But you know, complex sales is something that you know we spend a lot of time going into. We understand the business need. If genuinely this company has a need and can see either a competitive edge or it can save them money or can make them more efficient, then generally speaking, you keep sort of following that track and that's where the sales come from.
But then how do the decisions get made? I would imagine because there's so much bureaucracy in these larger organizations, each person has kind of their own objective and metrics that they're being kind of judged by.
Yeah, I think that you're certainly right. There can be a political side to some of these sales. People can have their own agendas. But generally speaking now, most companies have a need, have a direction. It's set out by the executive team. People lower down are asked to go and find suitable solutions. And there can be a multitude of solutions for what it is they're looking for. But you have to hone it down to the very specific things that are key to that company. And I think as long as people stay focused on those particular things, then everything else kind of falls into place.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you play in certain verticals? You mentioned banking. Is that a main area for your company?
We don't necessarily play in particular verticals because of the majority of what our software works on, which is the IBM mm-hmm. mainframe. We tend to resonate around larger, more established companies. So banking is one industry, but healthcare is another.
I was thinking healthcare, there's got to be a ton of
applications. Well, state local government, there's a lot of that in there. You've got retail. So any company that is old and established, I mean, this is one of the keys to Atlanta for us is Atlanta homes or houses the fourth largest amount of Fortune 1000 headquarters across the country. And typically we deal in the Fortune 1000 businesses, you know, the as I say, the more older established businesses that have had the IBM mainframe in there for years. And so this is why it's a key element. Not only is it just because of the businesses which are here, the attraction we can get staff in logistically. I mean, it's a great hub. We have Delta just down the road from here. It makes for a wonderful experience to work here.
And then do you go to market through trade shows? Like, how do you go to market? I mean, you just...
That is a multifaceted answer.
Just traveling 24/7?
So, yeah, that's it. We just pick up the phone and...
I thought you'd be traveling.
We do. So the way that our company is based is we have different regions. So we have a Southeast region. And so typically our travel is just within the Southeast. We have a Northeast or a Central or a West. And we do travel a lot. But you've got to remember, Atlanta also has a number of our customers here. So it's actually quite nice to be able to get in the car and drive as opposed to go through security. So, but to answer the marketing question, you start at the very top, which is search engine optimization, and you go all the way down to, you know, telemarketing. And in between, there is a plethora of different things you can do to attract the customers to looking at you.
But when you're such a partner, like with IBM, you're probably going to IBM-centric conferences and trade shows and being a part there because you're kind of working arm in arm with them.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And that falls in that plethora. We do a number of the key shows that IBM puts on a year. We do some other shows which are specific to one or two of the solutions or one or two of the verticals that we're doing very well in. So,
but you can predict, well, you tell me if I'm overstating this, but I'm getting the idea you can literally predict with some degree of accuracy human behavior. What maybe not an individual, maybe not what Stone's going to do, but what middle-aged white guys in the Southeast at this income level are going to do in regard to this.
Yep.
Yeah?
So it all starts with the data. You know, if you haven't collected the data, then, you know, you've got nowhere to go with it.
Right.
So as long as you have ample enough data. And so think of, you know, we're not the necessarily going to do the prediction for you, but our software and our solutions enables you to get into the data itself, pull it out, and then connect it with the business intelligence programs and with your analysts who then can certainly start saying, okay, I am in the consumer world and I can start to predict what, you know, Stone does on a Sunday morning if I want to track his credit card transactions or look at his data or, you know, however we've managed to, you know, collate the data.
And most guys, when they get to this point, if they've done this, 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 and this, then they have a tendency to start doing this, this. So, I mean, it seems like you can grow people's businesses, but I mean, you might be able to save lives with this, like in the healthcare arena.
It's all very possible. This whole world of, IBM's Watson is exactly why they have, you know, taken their business and concentrated on these three key areas, one of which is analytics, because it's just going to get bigger. As we consume, as we create more data, so, you know, I see some smartphones on the table here, that in itself is creating more data than we have done in the previous 50 years, just by what we do with our thumbs and our fingers on a daily, hourly basis. So you can see that this data isn't getting smaller, it's getting bigger, and it's becoming more niche as well. So you're able to see the little pockets of data and start to pull that out. And so when we once had a prediction that what you were going to do on a Sunday morning, now we don't worry about a Sunday morning. We think about exactly at 11 a.m. what you're going to do.
Wow. So what do you need more of at this point? You want more people to come hang out with you and learn about you at these trade shows? Do you want more talent? What are you personally saying? Hey, here's what we got to get.
You know, we are always looking for more talent.
Yeah.
It's a general philosophy that how you got here today isn't necessarily good enough to get you where you're going tomorrow. So that's always something we're constantly looking at doing is building our talent base. We constantly interview. We do these intern programs where we're constantly looking at the talent pool that's coming out there. And because of how our business runs, we can start to see, well, what is it we're going to need in the next 12, 24 months? as far as a talent and resources here in a localized office. We do also a number of things virtually as well, so we don't necessarily have to have them here, but for all the attributes that I mentioned about Atlanta, it's really cool to have them, you know, very close to you. The other side is, you know, we, because of our relationship with IBM, we have been a relatively unknown company. I mean, we're 26 years in business, and most people say, who? So you know, part of our exercise is to raise the level of awareness of who we are. There are a lot of smaller companies here in Atlanta that have started up and probably have a bigger name than we do, even though we've been in business for 26 years, because we did such a great job of partnering with IBM. We're not letting that go. We're building on it, but we'd also like to build a brand awareness as well.
Good stuff. So somebody, what's the pain the company's having? So I would imagine if, like you mentioned, if you're just merged or something and you have disparate software issues and you need somebody to help kind of wrangle them all, that's probably a pain that you guys help alleviate.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the pain is on various different levels. And as we have a portfolio of solutions, we have, I think, to date about 120 different products.
Right. Which is kind of a blessing and a curse, right?
It really is. It really is. You know, so what do you want? And open up a bag of tricks as opposed to this is what we do. We certainly do focus on some of the core products. But when it comes to pain, they vary. So it can be anything from you talking about various different disparate systems, being able to get the data from those, to actually how you present the data. So some of these systems have a less friendly interface. And so if we can modernize that, if we can take them from when they were built years ago, when a mobile phone wasn't even a thought, let alone being able to having a smartphone where you would be able to interact with it. So we are able to take some of these systems and allow them to play in those more modern technologies.
Right. It was like what Scott mentioned, that, you know, now with their iPad, they have ways to know in real time.
Yep.
Like that's something that your company could do.
Absolutely.
If they didn't have that in place.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's, you know, mobile, cloud, the Internet of Things are the sort of the three hot areas for consumers. Mm-hmm. And we start to see that blending and merging more into business. So if you take cloud and mobile and analytics, that they're the sort of the key areas where we see technology growth.
Right. Because you see the consumers are getting so used to it at their home.
Yep.
They want it in their work as well.
Yeah. And it's a sort of a happy medium that we're trying to play with, because businesses cannot adopt at the speed of what a consumer can.
Right.
You got 20,000 people and you suddenly overnight make them run in a different way.
And we're doing
way.
It this way now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So it also allows business to step back a bit and see actually what has worked well in the consumer world. You know, there's always something that rises and falls very quickly.
Right.
And sometimes business gets the advantage of sitting back and watching it fail and saying, well, glad we didn't adopt that. But there are other things also that are so huge and it's so, you know, so tough for them to adopt so quickly that, you know, they it's a race to get to it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. So now if somebody wants to learn more, website for you guys?
Yes. Very straightforward. You can go to www.rocketsoftware.com. Actually, if you write the letters R and S.com, it'll get you to the same website.
Nicely done. Well, I'm fascinated with everything you described and the possibilities of where it could go. But what resonates most for me, even as a small business owner, is this idea of having someone that can help me with the transition from the platforms that I'm on, the legacy systems that I'm on, because that's what would keep me up at night, is that whole transition from there to the new world, I guess you'd call it. And it sounds like you guys are locked and loaded on the ability to do that.
Absolutely.
Huh?
Yep.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio this morning. Stay with us just a little while. We're going to visit with one more guest, all right?
All right, will do. Thank you.
All right, next up on Atlanta Business Radio, you ready for the headliner, Lee?
Ready.
She's been very patient. No stranger to the Business Radio X microphone, which would make you wonder why I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce her last name. But please welcome to the broadcast, Dr. Dion. And is it Colbert or Colbert?
I wish I had the money as Colbert, but it will go with Colbert.
All right, we'll go with Colbert. Well, welcome back to the microphone. How
Thank
are you?
Thank you so very much. Thanks for having me. I am doing great, and it's a great pleasure to be here.
Now, you're with Great Expressions Dental Center. Can you share a little bit about what you guys are doing for folks?
Yes, Great Expressions has over 50 dental care centers in Atlanta, Atlanta proper. We do a full gamut of all types of dental care. We have pediatrics, we have orthodontics, we have general dentistry, we have oral surgery, endodontics, and pediatric dentistry as well.
Now, is that a franchise?
It is a dental service organization.
they don't like the F word.
They don't like the F word.
Right now, you guys are avoiding the F word.
And so, no, we're not a franchise, but we are a dental service organization. Our main office is in Michigan.
So how do you get around it? How does that work?
Well, we are practitioners who feel as though our patients are our private practices in a large service organization. And so with that, that's the way we deliver our care.
But you could have gone out on your own and been Dr. Dion.
I could have.
It has a nice ring to it.
It does. But along with that, I have great opportunities with the dental service organization. I really don't have to worry if Hurricane Matthew comes through and takes the roof off the building. Like, I have a place that I can practice, and it's been great. I am able to do all sorts of aspects of dentistry that I wouldn't be able to do in a private practice.
So there's probably some economies of scale in some of the resources you need to execute your services, right?
Exactly.
And which is good for me as a consumer.
It right? is, because we can purchase items on a large scale basis that helps the cost towards the patient. You know, they save money there. But more so than that, I work with a family of practitioners right there in my facility that I wouldn't have the opportunity to do in a private practice. I'm surrounded by specialists and other practitioners who allow me to be as good as I can be.
Now, had you always worked for them, or were you working in a traditional practice?
I've been practicing for 23 years. So I started off in a community health care center. I had to pay back. I had an obligation to the federal government. So I was a loan repayer. And I was in Dallas, Texas, though. It was a great opportunity. I learned a lot of things. And then from there, I worked for a hospital organization in North Carolina. I'm originally a Tar Heel. And so I worked there, and we only saw underserved children. And that was a great opportunity. And so still today in my practice, I still see underserved children that are on Medicaid. And the dental service organization, Great Expressions, allows me to still practice in that capacity.
So how do you go about marketing a dental practice? And maybe you get some kind of marketing support from a Dental Expressions, but or does your phone ring plenty and you don't worry about that? And that's part of the attraction?
Well, I think the great thing about us is that we accept all types of insurance plans. A lot of private practitioners, you know, have a limit on what type of insurance they accept. So with us accepting all dental insurance plans, our phone rings quite a bit.
Nice.
It is a great feeling.
Now, what about cosmetic dentistry? Are you guys involved in that at all?
Yes, we do all sorts of cosmetic dentistry aspects, as dental implants. The crave right now is bleaching and whitening teeth. We have adolescents who come in wanting their teeth whitened. So that's a big popular aspect of dentistry right now. Everybody wants that great smile. So we're able to provide that through dental crowns or through orthodontics. A lot of people are looking into Invisalign, where you don't have to wear the traditional silver braces anymore. So yes, cosmetics is a big industry now.
Now, being part of Great Expressions, is that kind of, do they tell you how to do your practice, or you're allowed to do whatever you want?
The great thing about working for Great Expressions and being a part of a group practice is no one tells you how to practice. We have practitioners from so many different dental schools who are taught different ways of things, but the quality of care is always at a level that's always being evaluated. And so for that, you get great quality care, and the practice is all different.
Now, your office is located in Stockbridge?
Yes.
Forgive me, I don't know where that is.
Stockbridge, you have to know. It's 75 South right there. But we have locations everywhere. I was in Douglasville for 8 years prior to Stockbridge. So I've been in Stockbridge now for 2 years. And the traffic in Stockbridge now is crazy with the work on 75. But that's the infrastructure of Atlanta, right?
Scott's going to fix that.
Yes. That's right. So what advice, if any, do you have to just the general layperson that just wants to take care of themselves, you know, be reasonably prudent with their dental health, some mistakes that we need to quit making, or just a few little self-discipline things that would really make a big difference?
I think, Stone, in our society, we're so busy concentrating on the visual, on how things look, but we don't really take the time to take care of the health of our teeth and our oral cavity. So the mouth is the opening or the beginning to total body care. So if you are not taking care of your mouth and your oral health, then you don't have total health care. So with that, I would say make sure you're seeing your dentist at least every 6 months, making sure that you don't have periodontal disease, because that can lead to other major issues such as heart disease. If you are diabetic, that causes more issues with your total health. And so those are the things that we really push for.
Now, if you're a dentist, why should you consider kind of hooking up with Great Expressions?
Because we're a great place to come and visit. We're very convenient for you as the consumer. We have weekend hours. We have early morning hours. My hours are 7:30 in the morning.
Wow, so you're an early riser.
Early riser, exactly. And because you have a one-stop shop for a lot of locations, some people, they really don't like the big office environment. They prefer a small setting. And for that, we have dental offices that are granted to take care of those needs as well.
Now, what if you're a practicing dentist?
Yes.
What should you consider Great Expressions? What would be some of the pros and cons?
I think the pro is that as a dental professional coming right out of school, there are things that you have to develop, and that's your time, your patient time, organizational skills. You still need to see a variety of patients, children, all the way to seniors, and this allows you that opportunity. And you're not having to deal with the overhead debt that you do when you first start into a private practice. Some dental students are coming out with over $250,000, $260,000 worth of debt.
Ouch.
Yeah, that hurts.
That's a lot of teeth to pull.
Yeah, that's a lot. It is.
So if somebody wanted to learn more or get on your calendar, where should they go? Website for you guys?
Website is www.greatexpressions.com. I'm always available. I would love to talk to any dental student that's out there or just to have a patient. It'd be great.
And then you're active on Facebook as well and the social media channels?
Yes, we have our Facebook. Great Expressions has a Facebook page as well.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton and our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you next time on Atlanta Business Radio.